how do you not see this kid running across these white rooftops from above with a drone whose job is to do surveillance? They're clearly covering up the fact that they had aerial surveillance. Why? And why are we only discussing this 6 weeks after the event? This just went from you guys are screw-ups to no. There's no more plausible deniability. The inconsistencies begin with the first shot.
I'm more confused than I ever was about what's going on here. This rip of TFTC was brought to you by River. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin. Go to river.com/TFTC and enjoy this episode.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
John, thank you for joining us. Really excited to talk about this topic because, like I was just mentioning, I think the fact that the assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life a little over 7 weeks ago now at this point has been completely swept under the rug, and the attempt to figure out actually what happened that day, it doesn't seem like there's much of an attempt outside of individuals like yourself who have been doing a ton of research and analysis of the events of that day. So I'm really happy that you're joining us to talk about this topic because I think it needs more coverage.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So I think jumping in just to start, maybe a little background on yourself. I know you've dove into the Las Vegas shooting in the past as well, doing some research on that. Maybe a little background, what you did in terms of Las Vegas shooting, and then we could jump into the events of July with President Trump. What is the official narrative and what have you found through your research and analysis?
Yeah, so for people who aren't familiar with my work, I got into investigative journalism in 2017, October 1st, the day of the Las Vegas shooting. And it was a bit of an accident. I didn't really plan on this becoming my career, but it, you know, that's what ended up happening. I was living in Thailand at the time, and I was kind of watching the Las Vegas shooting unfold in real time. And, you know, the way the clocks work, it was, 10 p.m., 11 p.m., midnight in Las Vegas, and that's midday in Thailand. So I'm watching the whole thing unfold, and it just didn't seem right to me. It wasn't sitting with me. So I investigated that, and it took about 6 weeks to figure out what happened. I posted a thesis, and the thesis still stands to this day as probably the best documented scenario of what potentially happened. And nobody's really presented another thesis. And so I publish all this stuff on YouTube. I have a channel called John E. Hoover is the name of the YouTube channel. It's kind of a joke about J. Edgar Hoover. It's like his alternate personality. I don't run around in dresses or anything like that anymore. So Johnny Hoover's his real name. So J. Edgar Hoover's real name is John Edgar Hoover. The E is Edgar. So Johnny Hoover's his real name. So I named the channel after him as sort of his alter ego. And I started publishing all this Vegas stuff. I've published 250 videos on the Las Vegas shooting. Was doing a podcast regularly about the Las Vegas shooting with my broadcast partner, Jason Goodman. So we do a show. He does like a series of shows under an umbrella called Crowdsource the Truth. And he has a whole bunch of different people that he does shows with, Charles Ortel, Lee Stranahan, a whole bunch of other people. David Hawkins, who passed away as they were doing shows together. Not in the middle of a show, but in the middle of the series. So he and I do a show every Friday night, and we were doing stuff about the Las Vegas shooting, looking into some of the more esoteric aspects of it. For example, many people don't know that there were three women checked into the room with Stephen Paddock, and their names were Katie, Joanne, and Laura. And that's a matter of record. That's in the log at Mandalay Bay. Most people don't know that. Most people don't know that the police saw a zip line outside. And they start talking about the zip line. And they're like, "Do you see the zip line?" "Yeah, I see the zip line. Is that somebody hanging from the zip line?" So there's a whole zip line conversation that goes on most people don't know about. And then when the cops breach the room, the window's not broken. And they're talking to SWAT on their headsets, and the SWAT guys outside say, "Yeah, it looks like there's another room with a broken window." So the whole story that we were told was effectively manufactured. It's like a manufactured narrative. And, you know, because of that experience and understanding what actually happened versus what the narrative was, you start to realize, oh, these guys will just fabricate any kind of cockamamie story. Doesn't matter if it holds water or not, as long as they get the crazy story out there early, that will be what sticks. And that's what happened in Las Vegas. Turns out Stephen Paddock didn't shoot anybody. Not one person. In fact, he was the first to die. So we can do another show about that. But the lessons learned from that can be carried to the July 13th assassination attempt. And we're, you know, certainly there's a number of lessons learned that can be carried over to the July 13th assassination attempt.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to do a show on the Vegas shooting, because that's something that is another sort of topic that is, they completely brush it under the rug. The facts of the day don't line up with the narrative, the official narrative that's been out there. It seems like there is definitely multiple shooters, eyewitness accounts of people shooting from many different angles, and a patsy in the case of the Vegas shootings, Paddock, and with the Trump assassination, you have this 20-year-old that, and is, when it comes to the patsy, it's very similar to it. It's like, it was the guy, case closed, it's done, let's not talk about this, let's just memory hole this. And now with the Trump assassination, they're like, yes, it was this 20-year-old lone wolf shooter. But there's been a bunch of analysis. I've watched much of your analysis. Chris Martinson from Peak Prosperity did the audio analysis a few weeks ago, which pretty convincingly, to me at least, proved that there was more than one shooter with that audio analysis. So let's jump into the Trump assassination. What is the official narrative, as you understand it, from what happened that day, and where do the inconsistencies begin to leak in to that narrative?
Well, the inconsistencies begin with the first shot. The first shot that we hear may not be the first shot that was taken. And that's sort of at the crux of the issue here, is that it appears that we hear certain gunfire, but it also appears that there's other gunfire that we do not hear. And that indicates something called subsonic suppressed gunfire. And it's a special type of round that you can buy, you know, rather easily. You don't need anything special. You just order that. You know, you go to Brownells or wherever you buy your ammo from, cheaper than dirt or wherever, whatever website. And you order subsonic ammunition. And if you put that on a weapon that is suppressed, now you have something that makes no crack and makes no thump. And so all that crack noise and the pop, 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 you don't hear any of that. And we see evidence of ballistic events taking place where there's no sonic signature attached to it. And it begins at the first shot, because with what seems like the first shot, the president is wincing and already reaching to his ear. It's already wincing and reaching at his ear before we even hear the second shot. Well, there's also a puff of smoke at the back railing of one of the bleachers at that first shot. And the problem is the ballistic trajectory and gravity, because bullets fall as they go. or certainly after a certain distance, after about 100 yards, sometimes they go up and then go down. But in this case, at this distance, the bullets are absolutely dropping. And so because of the elevation change between Trump's ear and the bleacher and where it hits the railing, which is very measurable, we have a paradox, which is the first bullet can't hit Trump's ear and that back railing at the same time. Not one bullet. And so that introduces this notion of, well, was there a second bullet that hit that railing? And if so, where did it come from? And is there evidence that it came from somewhere other than the roof of AGR? And the answer to that is yes. We look at all this ballistic evidence of people flinching in the back row of the bleachers, and this guy in the white outfit takes a tumble, he falls down, gets back up, but then goes back down, takes a knee again, second time. So we don't know if he was injured. I don't know. That could be Ronnie Jackson's nephew, for all I know. We don't know where that guy was sitting, Ronnie Jackson's nephew, who was grazed in the neck. So, you know, Dutch was hit twice. Copenhaver was hit twice. Corey Comparatore was hit and killed. Well, that's five rounds right there, right? That's five of the eight that we hear, right? We know one round hits the hydraulic line and the telecrane, and that goes spraying all over the place. Now, was that the same round that hit Trump's ear? Was that a round that went through David Dutch? And we don't know, because they haven't told us about through and through wounds. What happened to the rounds that were in David Dutch and Copenhaver? Forgive me, I have dyslexia with his name. I don't remember if it's Copenhaver or Copenhaver. I think it's Copenhaver, but I get it wrong 50% of the time. But did they have through and through wounds? And if not, were the bullets recovered? Let's see the bullet tracks. Let's see the IBIS results. I want to show me what you got. Why are we hiding all that? I pay for it with my tax dollars. Why don't I get to see the results? I'm not mature enough to handle that.
This episode was presented by River. River is the best, most secure place to buy Bitcoin in the United States. Go to river.com/TFTC, set up an account today. You'll be able to DCA into Bitcoin without paying any fees. You'll be able to give people Bitcoin via River links. You'll be able to send and receive Bitcoin over the Lightning Network. And you'll be able to set limit orders. If you want to buy Bitcoin at a particular price below or above where it is now, you can set orders to buy Bitcoin when it hits that price. Go to river.com/TFTC and set up your account today. This trip was also brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Unchained is building a financial services platform for a Bitcoin standard. They have over 7,000 clients that are securing over 90,000 Bitcoin with 12,000 keys on their platform. Their platform leverages Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. Their cornerstone product is their Vault product, a 2 of 3 multi-sig Vault, which allows you to hold 2 of 3 keys in a multi-sig quorum. That gives you full control over your Bitcoin. They also have an IRA product, a lending desk, and their rolling out a bunch of other products, including Inheritance Protocol and Sound Advisory. So go to unchained.com, set up a call with their concierge onboarding team today, tell them that TFTC sent you, and use the promo code TFTC at checkout. Unchained.com.
And then just in the last 24 hours, it became clear to me that the Secret Service was flying a drone around the venue. We have a communications log sheet, or like a sign-in sheet, you know, who's who and what their names are and how to get in touch with them. And one of them says UAS operator, and then it says drone next to it, and that's from Chuck Grassley. And then Chuck Grassley confirmed they couldn't fly the drone until 5:20 p.m. Well, that's 49 minutes before the gunfire. So if the gunfire is at 6:11 p.m. and these guys couldn't get this thing in the air till 5:20, that's plenty of time to see the kid running across the rooftop, right? We see him run across the rooftop on the body cam from the cops that are coming up from that from the hollow down by the water tank, and they're coming up the hill, and they see the guy run across the rooftop. Well, then why didn't the drone see that? Or did the drone see that? And is the drone guy who's flying the drone in the trailer somewhere, is he communicating with the guys on the rooftop over there? Is he communicating with the Hercules snipers? That's, hey, guys, we got a guy on a rooftop here. you want to take them out or should I? And that introduces the question, did the drone fire on the kid on the rooftop? I don't know. But we now know there was a drone flying all over the place, and everybody was posting all these images of what looked like UFO stuff and going, what the hell is this? And at one point, I thought it was a bullet in flight because we saw it like for two frames. It went, whew, you know. And if these are drones that are going 400 miles an hour in a circle around the venue, well, that kind of explains things. So I don't know what kind of model drone they're using. For all I know, you know, they got some fancy new stuff that we don't know about. But Chuck Grassley said, yeah, they got the drone operational at 520. And on the comms sheet, we see UAS operator drone. So that doesn't seem like much of a mystery anymore. Now we know they had a drone up there. Well, if you had a drone up there, shouldn't there be some footage we can watch? We got to watch footage of you guys dropping bombs down chimneys in Iraq. Why can't we see footage of the kid on the rooftop from the drone in Butler? Why would that be classified? This 20-year-old kid and he's dead. Who are we protecting? His dad? Screw that. Well, I want to see the footage.
There's a number.
Right? The guy's got a joystick sitting in a trailer somewhere flying this thing. And he doesn't get on the comms and say, hey, guys, hey, Hercules 1, Hercules 2, you see this kid on the rooftop here? There's no comms. There's no communications. We just have a guy up there flies a drone around, but he can't talk to anybody.
Well, it's not only that. It's, I mean, this is comms as the event's going on, the speech is going on, pre-pulling of the trigger or multiple triggers. How do you get up there in the first place? Again, talking about where our tax dollars going, what was the Secret Service doing leading up to the event? Every piece of evidence that I've seen.
Particularly now, though, that we know that they've got a drone flying around up there. What is it looking at? If it's not seeing the kid running across the rooftop, what are they looking at? The Mazda dealership? You're commenting on, hey, that CX-5 is really a good-looking car, you know, for the money. I mean, what are these guys looking at? How do you not see this kid running across these white rooftops from above with a drone whose job is to do surveillance? And why are we only discussing this 6 weeks after the event? Why didn't this come up in any real dialogue at, you know, the Dan Bongino show? Dan knows all these Secret Service guys. Why isn't he holding their feet to the fire about this drone thing and saying, hey, guys, Chuck Grassley told us that he had the drone up 50 minutes before the shooting. How many drones do you guys need to catch a 20-year-old? I mean, am I being a real dick? I mean, no. They've got a drone up there for 50 minutes. We see the kid run across the rooftop on the body cam. And they don't see this with the drone, and they're not talking to the Hercules. We see the South team, the South Hercules team, turn around from their post. They pick everything up and flip around like 90 seconds before the gunfire. What? How did they not see what's going on? I don't get this at all. And this is, to me, this just made the whole cover-up even worse. How is it that everybody who's investigating this, right? I mean, we got Chip Roy, Andy Biggs, Corey Mills, Eli Crane, Matt Gaetz, and they're the unofficial guys. They're not on the official investigation team. They're the independent guys. What were they at the Heritage Foundation or something last week? Nobody's talking about, hey, Secret Service had a drone up there. Let's get the footage. Let's get the comms. We want to hear the pilot of the drone talking to the butler, to the Hercules team. And the butler guys. We now know Greg Nickel was up in one of those windows, right? So my podcast partner, Jason Goodman, filed like not a freedom of information, but similar. It's like a right to know with the Butler PD. Dude, they sent him a thumb drive. Butler PD sent him a thumb drive. So Jason gets this thumb drive and it's all unredacted now. So now we know who was in each one of those windows up on the second floor. And one of them is Greg Nickel. And the other is this other guy. You'll have to watch the show tonight and find out more about that. We do a show every Friday night at 7:30 Eastern. So he got this unredacted data from Butler PD like yesterday. And he's been publishing, you know, what he's got. We now know that who was in the room upstairs. So if there's a drone flying around, the pilot of the drone sees what's going on. How are they not notifying everybody who's got a rifle down there? Greg Nickel, the guy in the room next to him, Hercules 1, Hercules 2, and the two secret snipers over by the dirt track. How are they all not hyper aware, and why are they not taking the president off the stage? Sir, we've got a threat. We're going to postpone. We're going to take you off the stage and postpone the event. Right? You saw the Fox footage. Fox got the footage from Copenhagen. You know that, right? The footage from Fox where you see the guy run across the roof?
Mm-hmm.
Was shot by the victim. That footage was shot by Copenhagen. That was his perspective of the event, and then bang, he gets hit. So he filmed the guy running across the rooftop. Fox gets the footage. Fox posts that footage. How does the pilot of the drone not pick up somebody running across the roof of AGR? This is now, I think, a really big problem. Thanks, well, Chuck Russ.
Well, not only is that a big problem, I mean, you have video evidence of civilians warning the Secret Service and the Butler Police Department that somebody was climbing up the roof minutes before the shooting. And, I mean, it all seems very fishy to me. The fact that all major networks were on the scene actually filming this, it seems to me that they wanted a JFK moment in 4K high definition on national TV on a Saturday evening. None of it adds up.
That's true, but that's kind of circumstantial and speculative, whereas with the drone, they've clearly not been talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're clearly covering up the fact that they had aerial surveillance. Why? Because it was ineffective, A, or B, because this is the first time a drone shot an American on American soil. Is that the possibility? Is that why we're moving on so quickly? Because this is the first time a drone operated by Homeland Security / Secret Service, right? Secret Service part of Homeland Security, shot and killed an American citizen on American soil from an unmanned unit. Hmm. Is that why this is getting so much hush hush? Because we fly drones over events and we will kill you with our drone. And then we're going to make up some story that the Butler guy, some cop from Butler, raised his rifle and he shot and hit the stock. Get the hell out of here.
Well, let's jump into that too, because that evidence was released last week, right? The stock had a piece blown off.
Exactly. So how do you fire at someone? So assuming the shooter's on the rooftop, in order to hit the right side of the rifle, because it's on the right side of his body, he'd have to be past the shooter's 12 o'clock. So he can't be right in front of the shooter, where the bullet goes down the barrel of his gun, right? So he's got to be a little bit past 12 o'clock, 12:30, 1 o'clock, shooting at the shooter. And if he hits the stock, well, the stock is tucked into your shoulder. If he hits that, doesn't he kind of blow out this side of your face? Yeah. So how does that happen? And we see the guy raise the gun up, but what we don't see is any recoil at his shoulder at all. And that doesn't happen. I mean, you can't not have recoil. He's going to show some recoil at his shoulder. What he's doing is he's raising his gun and he's looking through his scope. And he's using the magnification on the scope to see what is the condition of the perp. And he sees that the perp is dead. And he raises his fist. He doesn't take a shot. He's not shooting his weapon. You don't see any recoil at his shoulder. And if he did take a shot and hit the kid's stock, he would have blown this side of the face. It would have entered the clavicle here. I mean, it would have. We would have had a whole messy thing going on this side of the kid's face. We don't have that. Now, there is a piece of the stock missing. And the question then is, did that get hit as the bullet exited his neck? As the bullet came out the kid's neck here, this is where the exit wound was. Did it hit the stock? Because he's got the stock like this. And is that when it got hit? I think that's more likely. The Butler guy, he doesn't raise his rifle and shoot the kid in the stock of the gun. The kid would be missing this much stuff right here. Would be gone. It would be a mess. And we don't see that. There's no evidence of that. And there's no evidence of any recoil at the cop who raises the rifle. He's simply looking through his scope, sees that the kid is dead, and then he raises his fist. That's what's happening, not what Jeff the plumber thinks is happening. So but I applaud Jeff. Plumber, he's a hell of a plumber, and when I have to fix stuff, I go to his page. The guy is awesome. I mean, nobody knows how to do a stall shower pan replace like Jeff the plumber. So,
and so, the theory is like, obviously, if that Butler PD officer did not shoot, he was simply looking to confirm that the target was dead, and the bullet had to come from the other angle, which could have been this UAV.
Could have been the South team of Hercules if the kid is still looking at the present, because it looks like so I agree with Chris Martinson. It looks like the entry wound is here by the temple, in the left temple of the kid on the roof. It looks like the exit wound looks like a volcano here on the neck, right rear neck. And if that's the exit wound, which makes sense, that would blow out the stock on the rifle. If you've got the rifle tucked into your shoulder like that, and the bullet's coming from your left temple to your right lower neck because you're looking this way and you're prone, yeah, it's going to hit the stock of the gun and, shatter it. So it looks to me like the gun stock was shattered as the bullet exited his neck, not from a shot that he took from Butler. And again, so in other words, there's no evidence that the guy from Butler who raises his rifle, there's no evidence that he took a shot. You can't have like some evidence and not the rest of the evidence. In other words, if I hold up a plate in front of my face and the plate breaks, but I don't get shot in the face, that's a magic trick. Okay. That's not right. So you see him go through certain actions, but you don't actually see him fire the gun. And there's no evidence that he fired the gun, because if he fired the gun at the kid and hit him this way, the kid would have an entry wound at the clavicle, or this part of his face would be gone. That didn't happen. So the more logical explanation is he's simply looking through his scope, and they're trying to cover up. So we hear 8 rounds that get fired, and then we hear a 9th round that appears to be from a white hat, and they're telling you that's the Butler cop that raises his rifle. And then 5-8 seconds later, we hear that final crack and the girl screams. And that's the final shot that we hear. That makes 10. So the problem is we've got 2 white hat shots, the final shot and the one that comes right after the barrage of 5 that they're telling you is the guy from Butler. And the reason they're doing that is because they have to account for a shot that they don't really want to have to account for. They don't want to have to tell you that there was a counter sniper over by the dirt track who took a 488-yard shot, according to Eric Prince. Now, do you think Eric Prince just made that number up? Or do you think that's pretty, it's pretty specific, 488 yards, according to Eric Prince. Now, the problem is Hercules 1 and Hercules 2 are nowhere near 400 yards from the kid on the roof. So who's Eric Prince talking about? Right. And if one of those snipers took the shot, that didn't enter the kid's head here. unless the kid was looking over at them, you know, and not looking at the president, turns his head in a big way past, excuse me, past the counter snipers. So there were counter snipers in the dirt track outside, but the kid would have had to have turned his head past them to take one in the left temple and have it come out the right neck. So the ballistics of the entry wound and the exit wound that we see in the kid on the roof looks like the Southern sniper team took the shot, not the guys that were closest to him, the guys on the further roof. That's how that lines up. Temple to neck lines up with them. So what the hell is Eric Prince talking about with 488 yards? And President Trump, Eric Prince keeps saying it, and Trump keeps saying the same thing. Trump keeps saying 400 yards, 400-something yards, 400-something. He keeps saying it. He said it in his interview with Lex Fridman. He said it in his interview with Breitbart. He keeps mentioning this 400 yards. There's no 400-yard scenario to this kid on the roof. This is kind of weird. Unless the drone took a 400-yard shot. That's about a quarter of a mile. 400 yards, 1,200 feet, about a quarter of a mile, give or take. Did the drone take a 400-yard? I don't know. But he keeps saying 400-yard shot, and Trump also keeps talking about 130 yards to the shooter. But it wasn't 130 yards. It was 152 yards. And the difference between 130 yards and 152 yards in golf is like the difference between an 8-iron and a 6-iron. Meaning it's a significant, like to a guy who plays golf all the time, twice a week, the difference between 130 yards and 152 yards is a 6-iron versus an 8-iron. It's not like a rounding error to him. That's important to keep in mind.
Quick break here, freaks. This rip is brought to you by Gradually Then Suddenly, a framework for understanding Bitcoin as money by Parker Lewis. I wrote the foreword to the book. I'm honored to have done so because it's the best 0-to-1 primer if you're looking for a logical explanation of why Bitcoin obsoletes all other money. Buy one for yourself and maybe a few for your friends. Go to thesafehouse.com/gradually. That's thesafehouse.com, safe spelled S-A-I-F, thesafehouse.com/gradually. Use the promo code TFTC for $5 off at checkout. Buy it now, freaks. The price of Bitcoin is going up. You need to understand it. This is the best 0-to-1 primer. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores. Connect your wallets or custodial accounts and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to Zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC. $40 off.
I'm more confused than I ever was about what's going on here. The drone coming into the equation is new. And your point, too, being like, do they not want to admit that a military drone killed a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil makes a lot of sense considering all the flack the Obama administration got for their murder of a U.S. citizen in Afghanistan via drone fire.
Right, another Al-Mariki, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that, you know, that was pretty controversial. You know, he didn't have any due process. We made a decision and we sent a predator drone after the guy and we killed him. And, you know, this is an American kid. I think he was from Detroit or something like that. And that was under Obama. And apparently we use these. In fact, I've got some documentation on Homeland Security. You know, they write all these justification papers on why they need to do this and how they need to do it responsibly and blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, they're flying freaking Reapers up there. You know, they got predators, they got Reapers, they, you know, and that's what they're using. So the same stuff that they've been using at the border to monitor, you know, nighttime traffic and these coyotes or whatever. It appears Homeland Security, because they are the parent organization of Secret Service, it looks like they're using these at these events. And that's what this whole sign-in sheet, communication sheet says. UAS drone operator. And Chuck Grassley said they weren't able to get it operational till 5:20. I'm like, okay, they still had 50 minutes, Chuck. Let's talk about this further. So I don't know if Congress is on vacation because of Labor Day and all that monkey business. And, you know, now we'll have to move to our winter whites. All right. Now it's after Labor Day. No more white slacks at Congress. So, except I'm sure AOC will continue to wear them. Why is nobody talking about the drone, bro? They're flying a drone around the venue, around and around and around and around, 400 miles an hour, whatever the hell this thing is doing up there. And nobody wants to talk about that. The kid gets up on that rooftop and they had to see it. How do they not? Everybody's talking about the things you said before about how do they not pull the president off the stage? Whole bunch of people in that little grove over there are yelling, hey, there's a guy on the roof. There's a guy on the roof. The cops are all running around in circles like I'm watching Keystone Cops. Right? The guy drove up in the Butler SUV, jumps out of the SUV, climbs up on the roof, sees the kid, gets out of the thing, gets his AR, tries to load his AR, doesn't do it very well, has to load it twice. And they're all running around in circles around the building. And nobody tells the president's team, get him off the stage. And now we find out there's a drone above all of this. And they still don't put, come on. This just went from you guys are screw-ups to no. There's no more plausible deniability. I think that's what happens now. With the drone thing, the plausible deniability of you're just inept just went out the window. This is military technology that is designed to find somebody with a gun. All right. Don't tell me you didn't see the kid on the roof with the drone. And if you didn't, show us the footage. Show us the drone footage. Again, were you guys looking at the Mazda dealership? What were you looking at? If not the kid on the roof, show us the footage. When the LVMPD was forced to release the footage from the helicopter, it was forged. They monkeyed with the footage to not really show you. Yeah. They monkeyed with the footage to not show you certain stuff. And for example, when the helicopter first arrives at Mandalay Bay, they know what room the guy's in. They've already been on the telephone with security Mandalay Bay. They know it's 32-135. They know what room he's in. So why is the helicopter not just focused and hovering on that room? The helicopter flies around and around and around Mandalay Bay, and it never, ever points the camera to room 32-135. Isn't that weird? Ever. We never get to see the room. That's forged evidence because the window wasn't broken when the helicopter arrived. They broke it after midnight. That's why they never show you the window. So when you understand the extent that these guys will go to, the lengths that they will go to forge evidence, to create a cockamamie narrative, to cover up a story, that's when you start suspending disbelief. That's when you start saying, so wait a second. This could have international ramifications. The fact that we got a white kid on the roof, that may be the red herring. There may be a lot more to this than any of us are aware of. And the fact that they had a drone in the air, the Secret Service is flying this thing around, and that has been a secret for 6 weeks. And Chuck Grassley already talked about it. Again, it's hidden, you know, in plain sight. He talked about it. He said the drone went operational 5:20 p.m. And we see the comms sheet says, you know, they redact a whole lot of stuff, but they didn't redact the thing that says UAS operator, drone. That's not redacted. So again, this isn't a conspiracy theory. This is Chuck Grassley and the documents that he's provided. telling us they had a UAS operator there, but they weren't able to get it airborne until 5:20. And, you know, there's an airstrip right there at Butler Farm Show. They've got their own little airstrip there. So I don't know what unit this was. I don't know how big it is. But sure enough, people have been posting footage on Twitter and TikTok of what looked, you know, it was calling a UFO going around the thing. And I started accumulating photos of it. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Are these bullets mid-flight? And some pretty big name people in the photography industry were like, no freaking way are those bullets mid-flight. The one that that Doug was able to capture in front of the podium, he was at 1/8,000th of a second. The conditions were crazy, and even with that, it was kind of crazy that he caught it. So people were saying there's no way this UFO looking thing is a bullet mid-flight. It wouldn't look like that. There's no way it's going that speed. Now, it might be going 200 miles an hour, 300 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour. I don't know. But sure enough, now we know from Chuck Grassley, there was an aerial surveillance drone in the air. And it was up there for 50 minutes before the shooting. And, I mean, I think this has to become sort of the new focus of the investigation is what were the communications between that drone pilot and the Hercules, you know, counter sniper team. And what does the footage look like? What were they monitoring? What were they seeing? What did they not see? Why have we not seen this footage? So I'm on the warpath. On the warpath footage.
Earlier you said, this gives you an idea of the extent that they'll go to do this thing. So in your mind, who is they? I mean, that's a common question. Many people have their theses about who they are, but in this particular case, maybe even with the Vegas shooting, like, is this some...
So the Vegas shooting is different. Vegas shooting, CIA is caught flat-footed. They have no idea what's going on. No idea at all. Everybody who had anything to do with the Vegas shooting planning speaks Arabic. Mm-hmm. All right, so if you don't speak Arabic and your name doesn't end in bin something, you had nothing to do with it, okay? So the guy's girlfriend, the guy from Australia, none of them have anything to do with it. This was Saudi Arabian National Guard is about 150,000 people. So it's a private army for the Saudi family that's about 150,000 strong. Within the Saudi Arabian National Guard, there's a handful of people who are kind of ultra-conservative, right-wing Saudis that have allegiance to Wahhabism. And Wahhabism is one of the most fundamental of the sects, and some have said it's somewhat brutal. And some of these Wahhabi fundamentalists also become... sympathizers with Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda concepts. And so if you've got people within the Saudi Arabian National Guard that are sympathetic to Al-Qaeda and don't believe that a 31-year-old should be the crown prince of Saudi Arabia and that it's more appropriate for it to be, the kingdom, these are the keepers of Mecca, right? So when you're the king of Saudi Arabia, you're in charge of these holy sites. You're in charge of Mecca. You're in charge of Medina. So as that responsibility is huge, when they give that to a 31-year-old, people kind of freak out. Guys like Al-Walid bin Talal, other senior cousins, they're all descendants of Ibn Saud. They're all direct descendants of Ibn Saud. So you got uncles and cousins and nephews here, all of whom are direct descendants. So they've all got legitimate claims to the throne. And, it's kind of a game of swords with these guys. This is a ruthless thing. They kill each other because basically the king of Saudi Arabia is one of the wealthiest people, if not the wealthiest person on the planet, worth trillions and trillions of dollars. So when Mohammed bin Salman was tapped to be the new crown prince, it seems that there were people within the Sang that were rather upset. Well, the CIA gets caught flat-footed. This is all Saudi stuff. This is internal Saudi politics. The CIA gets caught flat-footed. Sang pilots and commandos training at Boeing helicopter, absconded with half a dozen helicopters, you know, four, five, six helicopters one night, and show up in Las Vegas in order to kill Mohammed bin Salman. And it turns out that Jamal Khashoggi helped plan and fund it. And Jamal Khashoggi was killed on the one-year anniversary of the Las Vegas shooting, to the minute. To the minute. Jamal Khashoggi showed up at the Turkish, at the Saudi embassy in Turkey at 8 o'clock in the morning, October 2nd, 2018. Well, 8 a.m. in Turkey on October 7th, a second, is 10 p.m. in Las Vegas, October 1st. He arrived at the Saudi embassy at the exact moment that the shooting began in Las Vegas. 1 year to the day, to the minute. And by 10:15 p.m., Jamal Khashoggi didn't have any fingers left. His hands had been removed, his ears and his tongue cut out. Jamal Khashoggi was dead by 10:20 p.m., Las Vegas time, October 1st, 2018. Cut into a whole bunch of pieces and filmed to show the other members of the family. This is what happens.
That's who wants insane. To play,
right? Who wants to play games? You want to keep playing games? This is what we did to your brother Jamal. And by the way, yeah, the appetizers, yeah, that was your brother Jamal. That moose you had, that was him. And everybody vomits, and then they arrest everybody. This is ruthless, man. They kill each other. They kill their cousins. They kill their nephews. They don't care. You're talking about a level of wealth that is unbelievable. I mean, MBS paid $500 million for Salvador Mundi, right? The Leonardo da Vinci painting of Jesus Christ. $450 million. And he hung it in his $300 million yacht. You want to talk about rolling?
Yeah. Let's talk about a message.
He's got a $300 million yacht, and he pays $450 million for the Leonardo da Vinci painting of Jesus Christ, and he hangs it in the yacht.
And the official Western narrative was that Khashoggi was simply a journalist that the royal family did not agree with. And so I've definitely stumbled across your Saudi theory on the internet over the years, and it's the one, because there was, and now we're back to Vegas, but like there was multiple helicopters shooting from multiple angles, and they were trying to catch him.
And before he came to America, before he came to America, and before he started working at the Washington Post, he was the number two guy at the GIP. The GIP is the General Intelligence Presidency in Saudi Arabia. It's their CIA. He was the number two guy there. So he's been in intelligence his whole adult life. And he was the number two guy to Awaleed bin Talal in a Fox thing. They were going to do something with Murdoch, and he was working with Awaleed. So he's been right-hand guy to Awaleed bin Talal. He was a number two guy at the GIP. And then they tell you he's a journalist at the Washington Post? Come on. Yeah, that's like saying, hi, I'm James Bond. I'm with the New York Times. Yeah, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, really? You're a journalist? Weren't you like the number two guy at the CIA in Saudi Arabia for like 20 years? Oh, yeah, but now I thought it'd be fun to write stories. Okay. No, he's not a journalist. He's the number two guy at Saudi intelligence, right? And he gets chopped up 1 year to the minute of the Las Vegas shooting. It's not a coincidence. Maiteb bin Abdullah, the head of the Saudi Arabian National Guard at the time, he was imprisoned and Mohammed bin Nayef, the recipient of the George Tenet Award from the CIA for cooperation and counterintelligence and all that other happy horse shit from the CIA, he was put in prison. So the people that the Obama administration, the Hillary Clinton State Department were embracing were the people that tried to kill MBS, and the MBS had to imprison. So all of her buddies over there are the people that tried to kill MBS. Now, FBI doesn't know this the night of. All right, so the night of, Sheriff Lombardo and all those goons, right, they all show up. And when they get into the room, 32 and 35, they're all looking at each other because the window's not broken. And they realize, how the hell do you shoot up a concert when don't break the window? It's like, you can't. The windows don't open. So they're looking at each other like, this can't be the guy. And then you hear on the headset, hey, guys, it looks like we got another room with a broken window. And we see people moving around. Is that you? Like, no, that's not us. So there's another room with a broken window at the Four Seasons upstairs. Who owns the Four Seasons? Awaleed bin Talal at the time, 45%. And Bill Gates on the other 45. But Awaleed has the ability to just say to MBS, listen, October 1st, 2017 is the Muslim holiday of Ashura. It's their equivalent of Passover. They tell the kids the story of Exodus. I don't know if you know that Muslims celebrate sort of the same thing with different names. It's like they're on board with the Old Testament. So all the Exodus, Genesis stuff, Old Testament stuff, they're on board. So they tell their kids the story of Exodus. They call it Ashura, not Passover. And they don't do it at the same time as the Jews do it. They do it at different times of the year. So October 1st, 2017... is Ashura, and that's when you tell the kids the story of Exodus and Moses and the river and the pyramids and the Sphinx, and they've got a pyramid and the Sphinx right out the window. So Awaleed says to MBS, bring the kids, bring the wife, bring the whole entourage. What better place to tell the kids the story of Exodus than with a pyramid out the window and a Sphinx out the window? I insist. I'm going to give you the whole wing. You take the whole north wing, take the whole thing, 35 to 40, all five floors, bring your whole entourage. And I think MBS invited Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump to be his guests that night. And I think they were there.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
I think Jared and Ivanka were guests of MBS at the Four Seasons that night. And I think they were there because she got out of politics immediately afterwards. She was traveling around the world. She was at the G20 meetings. He had her. She was Princess Perfect, right? Angela Merkel hates Trump, right? But Ivanka's delightful. What are you going to say? She's delightful. And she's got the wave. She's got the princess wave. He was setting up the next generation. He was going to do the legacy thing, and she was going to be the first female president. And then she said, I'm out, Daddy. I am not down with this. I got kids. I am out. And you haven't heard a peep out of her in 7 years.
Yeah.
Yep. And Jared gets $2 billion from his buddy because they went through hell together that night. It appears they were evacuated by the Maverick helicopters. Again, it's speculation. But Maverick takes off with so many aircraft at 10:13 while there's still gunfire. I was just talking to a dog walking guy, one of the eyewitnesses, who said there was 14 Maverick helicopters, but only 7 of them show up on flight radar. So it's like a breadcrumb trail. We know they're up there. We know where they're going, but not all of them turned on the transponders. So some of them are like ghosts. They're flying around. We don't even know they're up there. If it wasn't for dog walking guy, we wouldn't know there were 14 aircraft in the air. Why would you take off with 14 aircraft during the gunfire unless you're evacuating MBS's family and entourage?
How did they get out? I guess that's...
So there's an exit from Mandalay Bay where they do conferences there. They do like, you know, boat shows and car shows. They have like a, you know, convention center thing where they can drive trucks. So you can drive an 18-wheeler inside the facility. those doors are on the southeastern corner, right by the Las Vegas Metro Police Department in Maverick. I think they came out of there with the entourage and went right to Maverick, right across the street. Or there's a tunnel, and I don't know anything about that, but there could certainly be a tunnel from Mandalay to Maverick, because Maverick and Signature Flight Services are right next door to each other. Signature Flight Services is also Bill Gates, so he owns that. Maverick's right next door, literally right next door. So is there a way to get underneath Las Vegas Boulevard with a tunnel? I don't know. Otherwise, they took the motorcade and went from the southeast corner of Mandalay Bay to Maverick, and they were gone. We see them take off at 10:13. It's like, where are you guys going? The gunfire's not done yet. Where are you going?
I mean, it seems like quite literally, if you come at the king, you best not miss. And I guess that's my question. Like, how did they miss? How did they not?
Again, and so that's one of the similarities here. If you come at the king, you better not miss. Now, in the case in Vegas, 5 weeks later, he has the Night of the Long Sword at the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh. They tell everybody Ciara is going to be performing. I think it was Ciara or Ciara. Yeah, I think Ciara is going to be performing. And the king is inviting you. So you can't not show up, right? It's an invitation from King Salman. Come to the Ritz-Carlton. We got Ciara. We're doing a thing. We're celebrating, blah, 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 blah. Turns out that November 5th is also the anniversary of the gunpowder plot. A lot of people are familiar with the Guy Fawkes masks, V for Vendetta, right? And the screaming-looking Guy Fawkes mask.
Remember the 5th of November.
So, right, that's it. So the 5th of November is when they tried to kill King George, and it failed. So it was a failed assassination plot. The Guy Fawkes character is the key character in this assassination plot, and it fails. And on November 5th of 2017, MBS rounds everybody up at the Ritz-Carlton and locks the doors and introduces his friends from Blackwater. And the interrogations begin.
Another connection to the Trump assassination, Blackwater, Eric Prince.
Indeed, with Eric Prince again. So these guys were caught. They were punished. Many were imprisoned. Some were killed. Mansour bin Mukran never made it to the Ritz-Carlton. His helicopter was shot out of the sky that day. So, you know, coincidentally, his helicopter was shot out of the sky. He never even made it. So that tells me he was one of the ringleaders stirring up all of the commotion, because his father, Mukran bin Abdulaziz, had been crown prince at one point. When his father loses crown prince, dude, it's like your dad is going to be the richest man on the planet and you're his son. Guess what that means? It's like, dude, I'm going to be the guy. I just got to kick back, relax, collect Lamborghinis until daddy dies. And then I'm going to be the richest guy on the planet. That's what Mansour bin Mukran's thinking. And then his dad gets pushed aside. And Mansour bin Mukran's like, but I was going to be king. My dad was going to be king. That means I was going to be king. And now you push my father aside. That means I'm not going to be king anymore. I just became irrelevant. And they did the same thing to Mohammed bin Nayef. He was crown prince, and they pushed him aside. And they made MBS crown prince. And now you got two guys that both had been crown prince that they took it away from. And I'll lead them to a while. They never even made him crown prince at all. And he's all pissed off. He's like, I'm the richest guy here. I built Riyadh Tower, Kingdom Tower. How am I not the next king of Saudi? I've done more for Saudi Arabia, you know, with the Citibank and Apple and Twitter. So he thinks it should be him. It's heavy stuff. So the story that Stephen Paddock did it from a window is as disconnected from what happened as some kid from Pittsburgh, some pimple-faced kid from Pittsburgh, just shot at the president and hit him in the ear. And he had a car with explosives in the trunk and a van.
And with he never had social media and no digital footprint. But
how do you have a car and a van? Right? I mean, I don't know if you have two cars, but if you were to drive 45 minutes somewhere in one of your cars, is one of your other cars there too? How do you get your van and your Hyundai to the venue? Like, do you then you drive the van with the explosives and then you call Uber. You take an Uber from Butler back to Pittsburgh. Then you get in the Hyundai. You put some more explosives in the Hyundai and then you drive back to Butler. That sounds like it makes sense. That would be the only way to do it. So there must be an Uber that took Crooks from bringing the van with the explosives back to Pittsburgh to get the Hyundai, to get more explosives, obviously. This doesn't add up in any way, shape, or form. And nobody's being held accountable. And what's kind of weird to me is that the Trump camp isn't making anything of it. In other words, is he just playing his cards close to the vest, waiting till he wins in November, and then they're going to round these guys up and put them in stock? I don't know. But I'm kind of surprised that they're not more on the warpath. He's just like carrying on doing more rallies. Like, it's kind of wild.
Yeah, what do you – so when it comes to the Trump assassination, what is your theory in terms of the underlying intent? Like, going back to what started the talk about the Vegas shooting, like, who is they in this case in Vegas, Saudi Arabian royalty here?
I come at things kind of naively. So when I looked at the Trump shooting, my first inclination is I hope this is simple and stupid. And I hope this is like Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris 2.0, the Columbine shooters, two lunatics, and that's it. And that's the story. And that this was, you know, some lunatic who decides he's going to put Butler on the map, and that's the story. But no, once you start digging in and you see all the ballistic evidence and you start finding more stuff, you realize, no, this is a sophisticated hit. There's more than one shooter. Easily. I mean, we know there's two, there may be three or four. We've got silent gunfire. We've got simultaneous gunfire. There's a lot more going on here than most people understand and realize. And so when you start to see it that way, you start realizing, no, this is not a bunch of, this is not a kid or a bunch of kids from Butler that decided they're going to put Butler on the map. That's not what's going on here. This is sophisticated. And so that takes you to the other end of the spectrum, which is who the hell could pull something like this off other than people with inside the organization? So we know Homeland Security rolls up to Mayorkas, you know, and that sort of begs the question, were the people who were actually doing the dirty work here American? We were told the kid on the roof is Thomas Crooks. For all I know, Thomas Crooks died in a car accident that night at 2 o'clock in the morning the night before, 4 a.m., and his body was in the morgue. For all I know, I don't know that the guy on the roof's name isn't Sergei Belmakov from Odessa, and Thomas Crooks was killed on his bicycle at midnight the night before. I don't know that. Thomas Crooks, when he was 14 years old, looked a lot like Sergei Belmakov from Odessa. I don't know that that's Thomas Crooks. I see his dad going all over the place with somebody in a hoodie. It's pretty weird. So, again, it's hard for me to buy any of their narrative at all. Any of it at all. It's just very difficult for me to accept any of it as fact. And Chris Wray goes in front of Congress and lies all the time. There's no ramifications to him for doing that. So who's behind it? Who wins if Trump was killed? Who wins the most? And who would stand the most to lose if Trump were to win the election and become president? And so I think there's a lot of, typical suspects, right? So there's a whole bunch of people that didn't want to see Trump become president. But who are the ruthless people that stood the most to lose from Trump becoming president that would actually try something like this? In other words, I know that there's a whole bunch of people that, you know, would have said, wow, that's tragic and fortuitous at the, you know, in the same breath. But then there's other people I've been thinking about and saying, well, if Trump became president, wouldn't their gravy train end like within 24 hours? And the guy that comes to the top of the list for me is Zelensky. Guy's been siphoning off our tax dollars now through the entire Biden presidency, or, you know, since this war started. If Trump comes into office, that gravy train ends before the sun sets, the day one. He's getting rid of that. That's, you know, we're not sending any more money to Ukraine to fight Russia. Trump is not going to do that anymore. Guaranteed. Which means Zelensky's probably the guy who stands the most to lose financially from a Trump presidency. I mean, Xi in China probably would prefer not to see Trump as the president again. Putin would probably prefer not, but he's going to send a hit squad to kill him? It's like the only person who's stupid enough and crazy enough to do it is a guy who's an ex-comedian who doesn't have any common sense. He's a moron and got a taste of the Bugatti lifestyle and now doesn't want it to end. And somebody convinces him, if Trump becomes president, your gravy train's over, bro. In other words, they manipulated him. Just like in the movie Syriana, right? They manipulate people to do things to carry out, prosecute their agenda. So who is they? I don't know. But they are the ones that didn't want to see him be president. And then, you know, who has that kind of motivation to do something of this magnitude, to fund it, to plan it, right? They thought it was going to work. They didn't think, you know, they're going to get caught. The fact that it didn't work, and we've got all this evidence, and we're catching these people, I don't think they planned on this. Now, the question is, does anybody in the Senate and the Congress have the gumption, have this, you know, the character to see this through? And to put people in handcuffs. Because, you know, again, if attempting to kill the former president and we don't see anybody in handcuffs, well, then the sky's the limit. I mean, what can't you do? You can do whatever the hell you want. All right, so if nobody goes in handcuffs for this, you and I will talk about next year. You and I will talk about knocking off Fort Knox. Because it seems there's no ramifications for anything in this country anymore. And all we would need to do is wear some weird costumes that nobody would believe. Like if you and I both dressed up like alligators and we had three other guys dressed up like alligators in alligator costumes, nobody would believe the three guys, you know, five guys in alligator costumes robbed Fort Knox. They'd cover up the story for us and we'd get away.
Unfortunately for us, we'd probably show up and there would be nothing in the fort. But
yeah, I don't think there's any gold in Fort Knox. I don't think there's any gold there at all. But in other words, it's like, we don't get to hear the real story ever, it seems. Ever.
No, that's...
It's just all narrative nonsense. And
that's a frustrating thing as an American.
I mean, really. You know, we'll wrap up with this. You know that when we did the field hospitals for COVID, right? We deployed all those field hospitals, Jacob Javits Center, all that crazy stuff, right? Yep. We have field hospitals in every city. You know that they only stood for 10 days?
I did not know that because I remember because I was in New York at the time. I left pretty early within COVID, but I remember following it. You had the Javits Center and then you had the naval ships that were acting as hospitals too. But I remember that being, I remember the ships particularly being like a week, 2 week thing.
So the ships were there and the hospitals were ready April 20th and the Comfort left New York April 30th. And we started decommissioning the field hospitals May 1st after just 10 days. Now, the pandemic lasted like 3 years, and the field hospital stood for 10 days. It was the largest call-up of the National Guard since D-Day. And it had nothing to do with COVID. Nothing at all. That was the cover story. Now, COVID was happening, right? There was a SARS-CoV-2 virus and all that was happening. But at the time that we did the lockdowns and we built the field hospitals, there weren't 10 people dead from COVID in Hong Kong. There weren't 10 dead from COVID in Shanghai. There weren't 10 dead from COVID in Beijing. Nobody was dead in Vietnam. We declared a national emergency. Nobody was dead in New York. Nobody was dead in Florida. I think one person was dead in California. Nobody in Texas. The field hospitals and the lockdowns had nothing to do with COVID. April 27th of 2020 was an extinction level event, and 30 asteroids were converging on Earth. They didn't want to tell everybody that, so they blamed the virus. And they told you there's a virus, so we're going to put all the airplanes away. How would you put all the airplanes away? There's not 10 people dead in Shanghai or Hong Kong yet. They didn't want the airplanes getting struck mid-flight by asteroids and meteors or whatever. That's why we put the planes away. That's why we built the field hospitals. And on May the 1st, we got the all clear and we put the field hospitals away.
I've never heard this one.
So April 27th is an extinction level event. And they tell the president about it on March 10th. So NORAD meets with the president. They said, sir, we got a problem here. We got 6 weeks to possible like Armageddon, like 30 asteroids are heading towards Earth. They tell Trump this March 10th. March 11th, the whole COVID thing goes into play. March 13th, that Friday, he declares a national emergency in all 50 states, and they close the doors to Cheyenne Mountain for the first time in more than 10 years. For a respiratory infection that hasn't killed 10 people in Hong Kong? Huh? There's nobody dead in New York. There's nobody dead in Florida. There's nobody dead in Texas. What the hell are you guys talking about? And then on March 28th of 2020... the first meteor arrives and impacts in Akure, Nigeria. It makes a crater in the ground and blows the roofs off the houses. And that's when everybody starts taking it real seriously. And that's when we go into Operation Warp Speed, which is to build field hospitals by April 20th, because we're facing the extinction of mankind. The next extinction level event is April 13th, 2029, when Apophis approaches Earth closer than 20,000 miles. If Apophis were to hit Earth, it will be an extinction level event similar to the Chicxulub event that wiped out the dinosaurs. It will wipe us out. And that's in 4.5 years. April 13th, 2029. It's called Apophis 99942. NASA is going to tell you that it's going to miss by 20,000 miles. And those are the same people that tell you Stephen Paddock shot everybody out the window. So I don't quite believe what these guys have to say. To me, 20,000 miles is too close for this, too close for comfort. So I'm fully prepared to die April 13th, 2029. That's if we make it past that day, it's going to be a party like 1999. I mean, it's going to be crazy. But as we get closer to April 13th, 2029, you guys will find out that the movie Don't Look Up was kind of real. And it's coming. It's 4.5 years away. And with that, my friend, you know, I'll leave you with that to ponder. So Apophis 99942, April 13th, 2029. The first impact was March 28th, 2020 in Akure, Nigeria. You can look that up on YouTube and see impact crater stuff there. On my channel, on Johnny Hoover on YouTube, I talk about that stuff and share evidence of that. And you guys should follow me on Twitter because I post about this stuff all the time.
That's a new one for me. Lovely.
Yeah. So these are the lies. Once you start stacking these lies and you see, you're like, God, you guys suck. You just lie about everything. COVID, was real. It's a real virus, but that was to cover up our bird flu. It was our virus, and COVID was a cover up of our virus. That's a whole nother story. These guys in Langley are good, right? There's thousands of them, tens of 30,000 people working Langley. They're good, and they got black budget money. They got billions of dollars. They call the Treasury and say, we need another pallet. It's not based on gold. What difference does it make? We just make money, man. We just make it. We just print money. You know about fiat currency. It's horseshit. Tell me Langley doesn't call the Treasury and order cash by the pallet. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah, just deliver. Why wouldn't?
Has no impact whatsoever. Nobody knows how much money we have in circulation. Nobody's tracking that. The whole thing is a sham. I mean, that's the fundamental. You know about all this currency stuff. So it's just remarkable to me how good these guys are at Langley, how they're able to get away with this stuff, and how it appears that they're able to control the senators and the congressmen to the extent that people think Rand Paul is trying to solve the COVID thing. No, Rand Paul is helping cover it up. People think Senator Ron Johnson is trying to get... No, Senator Ron Johnson's from Wisconsin. That's where the real virus came from. University of Wisconsin. Senator Ron Johnson is leading the cover-up. Rand Paul is leading the cover-up. So this is just like trying to understand, wow, these guys are weasels at a level that's really kind of hard to comprehend. But once you pull back a little bit, you realize, so that's why they don't talk about this. That's why they don't talk about that. That's why they don't mention this. That's why they don't mention that. That's why. And I don't know what the benefits are to helping Langley, but they must be significant because trying to find somebody in the Congress or the Senate that's legit, that's willing to hold their feet to the fire, like Eli Crane has been doing lately. He's one of the congressmen who's just doesn't seem to give a damn about establishment politics. He's just like, look, I love this guy. So we'll see what happens. And again, I encourage everybody, see my stuff on Twitter, check out my stuff on YouTube, and check out the podcast I do every Friday night with Jason. He just got all this new unredacted stuff. He's been publishing that, so check him out. Crowdsource the Truth on YouTube. And his stuff is pretty impressive. So I think you guys will enjoy that.
John Cullen, everybody. I'm very happy that we did this. Hopefully this is the first of many. I've got paranoia running through my head now, particularly around this asteroid in 2029. Maybe that's why they're letting Elon send all these rockets up and land them back. Maybe he wants to shoot.
Oh, absolutely. Well, why do you think he's going to Mars? He keeps talking about he's moving to Mars. It's like, dude, there's no water on Mars. Why are you going to Mars? What are you going to bring Poland Spring with you? Where are you going to Mars with no water? Wouldn't you? I mean, I'd move to the bottom of the ocean. I was like, why would you go to Mars? I'd just stay here and just get in the submarine. Let's go down there and do, what was that movie? The Abyss? Let's do that. Let's do The Abyss. Let's go down the bottom of the ocean, stay down there. Yeah, we're in big trouble. 4.5 years from now, we're in big trouble. This Apophis thing is a problem. You guys can look it up. You'll read all about it, and they'll tell you, yeah, it's really big, and it's just going to miss. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We only figured out the three-object problem recently, which is how to calculate the gravitational relationship between three objects. And this thing is coming through the asteroid belt. Yeah, we're... Assume the math is wrong. That's a safe assumption. Yeah. So, can't thank you enough. I appreciate the hospitality. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you, John. Can't wait to do it again. Enjoy your weekend. That's all we got today, freaks. Peace and love. Thank you.